Good afternoon. This is Carol Bond with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated July 19th, 2016. We'll begin with the feature article on page one. The headline reads, Richland Transforming Interactive Meeting Space. And this was written by Chris Lusvardi. A transformation of the student learning environment at Richland Community College is underway, beginning on the second floor of the South Wing. The impact of the changes was evident to visitors, including John and Tarks of Decatur, who stopped by a recent open house to see what has been done at part of the Carroll Center for Business project. While Tiarx has young children who are still a long way from being the age to attend Richland, he could understand the need for schools to adapt spaces to meet the evolving learning styles of students. Quote, "This gives them an opportunity to teach in different ways," Tiarx said. "This is the way it's going. It's not going back to traditional classrooms." Richland is working with BLDD Architects to test the configuration of the space this summer as part of the $3.5 million Carroll Center project, with funding raised through the Richland Foundation. The space has not changed since the original construction of the main campus building in 1988. The reconfiguration of 9 classrooms is part of the process to gather ideas for how best to create a flexible learning environment, said Greg Florian, Richland Vice President of Finance and Administration. Ideas were gathered during a series of interactive meetings this spring. Designers are continuing to seek as much comment from students, faculty, staff, and community members as possible. Visitors are invited to post their reactions on a wall in the hallway, Florian said. Quote, "Collecting the data is a big piece of the project," Florian said. "People seem glad we're listening and see what they said got implemented." A first layout was tested before the furniture, much of which has been donated, was moved around this month to see what might be most effective. The west side of the hallway has been turned into 4 innovative classrooms, and the east side has been converted into student study areas and a lounge area. Teachers have been eager to test various ways to engage students in an active learning environment, said Tina Zindel McWilliams, who has been among those working with students in the newly created areas. "It is intriguing to see what it is like," Zindel McWilliams said. "We want to see how we can integrate a traditional format and still lecture, then go try something else. By being able to create the space for use over an extended period of time, designers can test the functionality and incorporate changes when coming up with something else. By being able to create the space for use over an extended period of time, designers can test the functionality and incorporate changes when coming up with the final layout," said Bruce Maxey, an architect with BLDD. Quote, "It gives the college firsthand knowledge of the educational environment," Maxey said. "It helps alleviate the unknown." This is one of the first times BLDD has used such an extensive process to gather feedback at the community college level, Maxey said. Quote, Studies have shown these types of spaces keep students more engaged, Maxie said. We've done a lot of work to observe classes and try to understand their needs. The technology that can be used in the classroom can make a big difference, Florian said. One of the remodeled classrooms has tables with seating for students to go along with 6 large monitors that can show different information, he said. The goal will be for students to bring in their own computers and present information as needed, Florian said. It's the type of technology that is being used at various levels of the educational process, said Andy Hines, Richland's mathematics, science, and business dean. Quote, we're seeing universities adapt, Hines said. It's time for community colleges to do the same thing. Richland administrators are hoping the changing styles of classroom and meeting room layouts eventually take hold throughout the campus. The ability for students to comfortably interact in an open environment with more windows is part of what is being tested, Florian said. It's incredible to see how this has all opened up, Florian said. People really like the openness and having daylight in the hallway. After allowing time for further revisions before construction begins, the final design is expected to be implemented by next summer. Another article of local interest on page 1 has this headline, Gambling Celebration Hours Draw Council Focus, and this was written by Allison Petty. After hearing from the public, Decatur City Council members seemed ready Monday to continue moving toward restrictions on the number of video gambling parlors in the city. The council held a study session to seek comments about video gambling as it contemplates changes. Most of those who spoke were business owners, either of bars or parlors. Mayor Julie Moore Wolf has said repeatedly that the council decided to allow video gambling in 2012 with an eye toward helping struggling bars and taverns make ends meet. Quote, if we would have really understood the possibilities, we would have been smarter about this and we would have had bigger restrictions, she said. This was about trying to help existing or locally owned bars and restaurants. City staff members in the coming weeks will prepare options for the council to limit the parlors. Council members also have expressed a willingness to raise the fee for machines, and city staff is expected to present information about how much it costs the city to issue machine licenses. Bar owners said the addition of more gambling parlors, which sometimes offer free food and drinks, have cut into their revenue from the machines. Quote, things have been really tough, said Kim Logan, co-owner of the Sundown Lounge. Quote, a lot of places in a lot of locations that are neighborhood bars or businesses that have been here for quite some time would not be here without the help of the gaming machines. Greg Meisenhelter has a perspective as both a parlor and a bar owner. He co-owns 4 Debbie's video gambling parlors throughout Decatur, owns Lock, Stock, and Barrel, and co-owns the winery. Meisenhelter did not speak at the council meeting, but said he previously shared information about his businesses with City Manager Tim Gleason. While some of the parlors are doing well, others barely break even after covering payroll, utilities, and operating costs. Revenue from the machines also did not help his bar businesses the way Meisenhelter thought it would. He said he hoped the council will consider a, quote, happy medium when seeking fee increases for machines. Quote, if they want to raise it a little bit, I understand why, he said. If they want to raise it a lot, I feel like that's going to become greedy and they're going to end up shooting themselves in the foot. In other business, the council declined to extend Decatur Celebration's hours to midnight on Friday and Saturday of the event. The request, which would have extended liquor sales until that time, caused some council members to worry about security. Celebration producer Laurie Sturgill said the extra hours could have generated as much as $10,000 more over the course of the weekend. The event's organizers are seeking to help it become self-sustaining. The council ultimately approved a liquor permit that would allow Celebration to operate until 11 p.m. on Friday, August 5th, and August 6th, Saturday, the same hours as previous years. Moore Wolf also took a moment to praise Decatur Chief of Police James Getz for his handling of an incident last week in which a Decatur police officer shot a man who was reportedly armed with a knife and a BB gun that resembled a handgun. The Illinois State Police is investigating the incident. Though the police officer was white and the man was black, the incident did not spark the unrest that many other cities have seen in the aftermath of police-involved shootings. The police department has worked with Janelle Norman, president of the Decatur branch of the NAACP, and other community members to develop a response team for such a scenario. Moore Wolf said she appreciated the work that Getz and Norman have done over the past year to establish open communication. Audience members applauded after the mayor's comments. During the meeting, council members wore blue ribbons signifying their support for the enforcement or for law enforcement, part of a campaign Councilman Pat McDaniel said he wants to start after recent police killings in Dallas and Baton Rouge. Speaking after the meeting, Getz said the department has received many positive messages from the community. He appreciated the gesture of support from the council. Quote, we do it for the right reasons. We don't do it for accolades or anything like that, he said. We just want what's best for the citizens and the cities. We turn now to page 3 for more news of local interest. This headline is Mount Zion Mulls New Animal Code. This was written by Ryan Voiles. A cap on the number of animals a homeowner can have and where chickens can roost is up for discussion in the village. The Board of Trustees held a discussion during its Monday meeting on a new animal code that would clarify language and fill the void left by a past change in code. The major changes in the proposed animal code include setting a maximum number of 5 animals per household, requiring residents who want to own chickens to have at least 1 acre of property and obtain a permit, and a detailed schedule of fines and increased fine amounts. The updated code would add teeth to the enforcement power, said Village Administrator Julie Miller. Quote, "We're not going to go door to door and count up your animals to see if you're in violation," she said. Those who currently have chickens would be grandfathered in per the tentative code. The need for an updated code comes from a need to update and to fill a hole left by an earlier mistake. The issue occurred several years back when the county's animal control under state statute took over the village's issuance of rabies shots. In response, the village erased the section of the village code of the village code book that dealt with rabies. Unfortunately, Miller said, a large portion of the animal code was inadvertently erased as well. After months of discussion, Miller said officials determined the prior code was outdated, and it was determined a new animal code needed to be written from scratch. Quote, "The old code didn't have a lot of definitions, so it leaves it up to interpretation, like, what is a vicious dog?" she said. Monday's discussion was to allow board members to better understand the proposed changes, and no action was taken. A copy of the proposed code is available on the village's website at www.mountzion.com. The board is expected to vote on the ordinance at its next meeting. In other business, Mayor Mark Wells reiterated that the village is not responsible for the gas prices in Mount Zion increasing in recent months to match prices in Decatur. The point was addressed after the village received a complaint from a resident over the price of gas. As Mount Zion is not a home rule municipality, it has no ability to implement a gas tax, as did Decatur. The issue of gas prices occurred shortly after the Decatur City Council approved a 5-cent gas tax at a meeting in February. Quote, "The village has no control over gas prices," Wells said. We return to the Decatur City Council news, also on page 3, and this headline is Chuck Kuhl, K-U-H-L-E, announces Decatur City Council run, written by Allison Petty. Chuck Kuhl, a former Macon County Board member and longtime tennis director for the Decatur Athletic Club, announced his candidacy for Decatur City Council on Monday. Kuhl, 57, stressed his lifetime connection to Decatur, emphasizing his focus on the positive aspects of the city. Quote, "We can control how we speak about our city," said Kuhl, who recently became general manager of the athletic club and has been its director of tennis for 36 years. "We are all ambassadors of our city, and we all need to remember the positives about our lives here. We can control our work ethic and be successful in Decatur." Kuhl said his top priorities would be lakefront development and jobs. He said he hopes to work closely with the Economic Development Corporation of Decatur and Macon County, which he viewed as the experts for job creation in Decatur. He is a graduate of MacArthur High School and received a bachelor's degree in law and human behavior from U.S. International University in San Diego. Kuhl also serves as director of tennis for the Decatur Park District during the summer. He is tournament director for the USTA Ursula Beck Pro Tennis Classic, which he founded in 1999. Kuhl served on the Macon County Board for three terms between 1990 and 2000. While people in Decatur can't control the global economy and how it affects local businesses, everyone has an opportunity to give back in some way, he said. Quote, we are all experts in some part of our lives, Kuhl said. We all need to use that expertise to give back to Decatur by creating an event, volunteering, serving on a committee, or just being more positive to those non-residents that we talk with. During his announcement speech, Kuhl said that criticizing the council's past decisions is not the focus of his campaign. Later asked to name a recent decision with which he disagreed, Kuhl said he thought angled parking downtown needed to be revisited. Quote, I know they want to try to create more parking downtown, but at the cost of safety, I'm not so sure, he said. The election is in April. Decatur Park District Commissioner Chris Riley has also said he is running, and Councilman Pat McDaniel said last week that he will seek another term. Three council seats will be at stake. Education writer Valerie Wells has this article on page 3, Kindergartners Go on a Hunt. On the rug in Roxy Danius' classroom at Durfee Magnet School, several little children were expertly using iPads to watch cartoons about the alphabet. Quote, I didn't even show them how to use them, Danius said with a chuckle. Quote, I just told them, here's the app you're looking for and what I want you to do with it. It just comes natural to them. Durfee is holding Kindergarten Safari this week, where the incoming kindergarten students spend half days in school getting to know their teachers and each other and becoming acquainted with the routine of going to school. A bonus is that the bigger kids aren't around, so the kindergartners can learn their way around and have the place to themselves. Danius said it gives the youngsters a head start because they come to school the first day already comfortable and ready to learn. Quote, this is something that we started last year, and we do it because we had a lot of kids that came in that didn't have preschool, said Rita Ellis, who was instructional coach at Durfee last year and will teach kindergarten at Hope Academy this school year. Quote, they didn't know what school would be like before they got here, so we could get all the tiers out and introduce them to the school. They get a tour, and they know what their classroom would be like before the official start of school. A few parents stayed with their children for a while on Monday morning until the children were comfortable and the parents could slip quietly away. Only one child really cried, and Ella said he told her he was nervous about school. Quote, I don't think the word nervous was even in my vocabulary at that age, said Principal Diane Brandt, laughing. That little guy recovered quickly, however, and most of the children jumped right into activities. One benefit to Kindergarten Safari, Ella said, is that it gives the teachers a chance to observe their students, figure out who needs work on basic skills, such as using scissors or holding a pencil, and which ones have already mastered those things and will be ready for other tasks. The teachers also will be more prepared for their first days of school by knowing those things. Brant is new to Durfee this year and is spending her first week on the job overseeing the event. Quote, "We feed them breakfast and lunch, and just like during the school year, we have them open everything," Brant said. Quote, "We don't open things for them. We want them to learn how to open the cereal and open the milk. Just the basic skills that they need to start school and to give them a little bit of a head start." There are three photos that accompany this article, and I'll do my best to describe them. The first one, we see a brightly colored carpet that has letters of the alphabet and bright elementary colors and images like the sun and heart, and also numbers from 1 to 10. And on this rug, we see three little children. These are Bryson Graves, Zachariah Eubanks, and Simon Black. They're practicing spelling their names with plastic letters during kindergarten safari activities to help them get acquainted to class at Durfee Magnet School. The second photograph shows a little girl, Adrea Tate, who has a big smile on her face, and she's getting a high five from speech therapist Suzanne Rundle after she correctly spelled her name. You can just tell how proud she is of her accomplishment. And the third photograph pictures a girl named Marie Britt, who is trying on earrings that she made with Play-Doh. These are amazing earrings. They're made of long, thin coils of red Play-Doh that curl over the little girl's ears and loop and hang all the way down below her shoulders. The smile on her face says it all. She's very proud of what she has made. Here are some announcements on page 3. Christmas in July. The Macon County Association for Home and Community Education will host a Christmas in July event at 1 p.m. Saturday, July 23rd at the County Extension Office, 3351 North President Howard Brown Boulevard. Try out crafts, get festive decor ideas, and sample holiday treats. RSVP by calling 877-6042. In the good old summertime will be the theme of the Salvation Army's monthly program for seniors 50 and older at 11 a.m. Friday, July 22nd in the Army's Community Hall at 229 West Main. The suggested donation is $3. Reservations are due by noon Wednesday, July 20th by calling 428-4672. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the July 19th issue of the Decatur Herald and Review. Please stay tuned.